They have treated the wounds of my people carelessly, says the prophet Jeremiah of the leaders of his day. They have treated the wound of my people carelessly, saying, peace, peace, where there is no peace. All those called to leadership in society and church need to pay careful attention to the wounds of God's people. God's people in every part of the world, all people. There are no simple solutions to their ills. There is no remedy in pious slogans. Reality is not changed by sound bites. The answer to those ills does indeed lie in peace, shalom, wholeness. But words alone are not enough to mend the fractured earth. They have treated the wounds of my people carelessly. According to the United Nations, the world is facing the worst humanitarian crisis since 1945. A terrible famine stretches across Africa from Nigeria to Yemen through Somalia and Sudan. The disaster's emergency appeal was launched at midnight on Wednesday. I hope we will respond generously as individuals and as churches. The commentators are all agreed. These catastrophes are the direct result of human conflict, disastrous civil wars and rivalries, corruption and greed. Fragmentation, blindness, and complacency in the developed world as well as the developing nations. On Thursday, in the midst of this massive humanitarian disaster, the world's richest nation cut its aid budget. They have treated the wounds of my people carelessly, says the prophet. Our world is interconnected. We celebrate later the Fair Trade Foundation's plans for relaunch. I'm currently joining those who are supporting amendments to the Criminal Finance Bill to make it more difficult for politicians in every country, including Africa, to launder funds and avoid the taxation which is needed to build local schools and hospitals and nations. Parliament passed the bill this week to begin the process of leaving the European Union. The British electorate voted almost a year ago to change our relationship with Europe. There are different and legitimately Christian views on how that relationship is best reimagined. As that process begins, though, we need to be alive and honest to the dangers of fracture in our wider European relationships and fracture in our own United Kingdom. And there is a pressing need to reach deeper than the careless slogans which shaped the referendum campaign of a year ago. There is a need for serious reimagining of Britain's place in the world and our national identity and values. The wounds within our nation are very real. The referendum exposed them. The Brexit process must now seek to heal them and to change, but also strengthen European integration. The churches and the faith communities have a critical role to play in healing those divisions and in renewing political debate from the profoundly Christian foundation that every man, woman, and child is made in the image of God and of inestimable and equal value. There is inequality and fragmentation within our own communities and within our own diocese. According to figures published yesterday, there are now 4 million children in poverty in the United Kingdom, the highest since the 2008 financial crash. The diocese is publishing today a powerful new piece of research for richer, for poorer, poverty and livelihoods across the Diocese of Oxford. It's available online on our website. It will be in printed form in a few weeks' time. And that report compares statistics from neighborhoods of equal size across the entire diocese to build a picture of poverty and deprivation in Oxfordshire, Berkshire, Buckinghamshire, and Milton Keynes. And the colored maps within it show fragmentation, wealth and poverty side by side, poverty in relatively wealthy communities is often masked and hidden. The report exposes what churches in many of our neighborhoods already know. There is a need for food banks, for homeless provision, for work with refugees, for engagement with children's centers and social care all across this diocese. We need to take great care at this moment in our nation and across the world. Inequality is growing in a world of finite resource, and awareness of inequality is also growing, driven by social media. In those conditions, resentment and anger deepen and surface in unexpected ways. They have treated the wounds of my people carelessly. The world changes. Life grows more demanding for many, especially for those in work. I've heard much in my deanery visits of the stress created in families and individuals, which is caused by the high costs of housing in our region, the need for both partners in a marriage to be working in demanding roles, the accelerating pace of life, and the fragmentation of families and individuals, which is the inevitable result. In this context, we need, as the Church and as the Church of England, in this diocese, to take ourselves much more seriously, if I may say so. What we are and what we do in every city, town, and village is vital and transformative for individuals, families, and communities. By the grace of God, though we do not often realize it, we are making already an immense difference. As we gather together for worship in Lent, we sometimes use these words. We come from scattered lives to meet with God. Let us recognize his presence with us. And week by week, those who lead scattered lives in a fragmented world gather. We bring our wounds and the wounds of God's people and the wounds of the world to God's love and grace and healing. We find again unity and wholeness within our worship and prayer. And we find again the strength and vision we need to be people of influence, disciples and apostles of Christ in our families, in our communities, in our workplaces, and in wider society. This morning in our synod, we will consider together the report Setting God's People Free on Lay Leadership and Discipleship. Matthew Frost, one of the authors of the report, will join us. And you'll have seen, if you've read it, the report calls for a change of culture in our common life, a shift to find a way better to form and equip lay people to follow Christ confidently in every sphere of life as disciples in our common baptism. There's never been a more important time for the Church to break free from clericalism and to affirm the value of both laity and clergy in the mission of God in the world, in our common baptism. The world and our nation need us to be the best church we can be in this season and in our time. The wounds of God's people are so great and so serious. And it's in that context that we need to set the deep questions with which we wrestle as a church. And this morning we will spend time also reflecting on the current and recent debates on human sexuality. Here too, the wounds of God's people are deep and serious. There is a need for great care and tenderness in our dealings one with another, for careful listening and discernment. The archbishops have called in their letter after the General Synod for a radical new inclusion in the church. I am personally committed to that vision. We will need to explore what that call will mean within this diocese in the coming months for lesbian and gay people, those who are bisexual, transgendered, and intersex, both within and beyond the church. We come from scattered lives to meet with God. Let us recognize his presence with us. In the period since this synod last met, I've visited 15 of our 29 deaneries. Thank you for your welcome and hospitality. Each of the deanery days has been inspiring in different ways. I've come back full of joy and hope and many stories to tell. I've been learning much, not least that we are a large and diverse diocese. No two deaneries so far have been remotely the same. We're called to be the church in so many different places and contexts and ways. And I've been asking two questions as I travel. What kind of church are we called to be? And what are we called to do together as a diocese? What are our priorities? Well, I believe we're called to be a more Christ-like church, the Church of the Beatitudes. And as many of you will know, I've been searching for just three words that might capture that ethos for the next part of our life together, to bind our scattered diocese together in God's mission and guide us forward. Those three words are settling now. I believe we're called to be and to become a contemplative diocese. Contemplative. Poor in spirit. Rooted in God's presence. In peace and wholeness and stillness. As we come from scattered lives to meet with God. In a wounded, fractured world, it is only a deeply contemplative church which can bring God's grace and love to those who need it. I believe we're called to be and become a compassionate church, taking seriously the wounds of God's people and the wounds of the world. And I believe we're called to be and become a courageous church, as laity and clergy together, courageous in bringing peace, courageous in seeking justice, courageous in our witness to God's love in Jesus Christ. In May, we'll be gathering more than 100 people together from the leadership community of the diocese to work on these questions over 3 days together. What kind of church are we called to be? And what are we called to do together? Please pray for that gathering, and I will report the outcomes and dialogue together back to the synod in July. They have treated the wounds of my people carelessly, saying peace, peace, where there is no peace. We're to be people who take those wounds seriously in the world, in our nation, in our church, and in ourselves. We are to be a church of radical inclusion for all, cherishing the gifts of lay and ordained together. A church which is contemplative, compassionate, courageous. A church which takes herself seriously, not for our own sake, but for the sake of the world. We come from scattered lives to meet with God. Let us recognize his presence with us.